Rape is rape. Gisèle Pelicot, emphatic on the stand Wednesday in a trial that sent shockwaves well beyond France's borders. The 72-year-old retiree batting away suggestions that the 50 defendants invited by her ex-husband to enter their bedroom when she was under sedation could have engaged in anything other than non-consensual sex. Pelicot has drawn admiration for her decision to waive her rights to protection from the public eye and to sit front and center in the courtroom every day since the September 2nd opening of a trial that's due to last till December in the southern city of Avignon. We'll be asking about that choice and a case that raises questions about individual guilt and collective responsibility. How many in the picturesque Provence village of Mazan knew? As her mental and physical health deteriorated over a period of years, it was only when gendarmes investigating a cold case came across lewd photos shared over the internet that she discovered the horror. Why did no one come forward? Statistics show women and girls do speak out more in France. They file more complaints with police. Are they more easily believed? In France, high-profile cases have come to light in the wake of the Me Too movement this past decade. But is there still what some feminists see as a culture of rape that's too often pervades? Today in the France 24 debate, we're asking about the Mazan rape trial. And with us is Cynthia Illouz, founder of news and media platform The Women's Voices. Thank you for being with us here on France 24.
Thank you for having me.
We're also joined by Emma Sibi, advocacy coordinator for the Coalition for the Abolition of Prostitution. You're also a spokesperson for the Mouvement du Nid. Explain what the Mouvement du Nid is.
Mouvement du Nid is a grassroots feminist organization that provides holistic support to persons in prostitution in France. We fight against the prostitution system and we advocate towards its end.
All right, and thank you so much for being with us. Thanks as well for joining us 9 time zones away in Victoria, British Columbia. Umni Khan, researcher and associate professor of law at Carleton University. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Your reactions on the hashtag F24 debate. Yeah, it's third week of the Mazan rape trial. And after Wednesday's hard-hitting testimony by the wife of Dominique Pelicot, one of the defendants, a supermarket clerk, admits there was never any consent. Charlie James has more.
Gisèle Pelicot met with applause as she arrives at the courthouse in Avignon. The men accused of raping her while she was unconscious take pains to hide themselves. In court Thursday, one of the few defendants who has admitted to raping Pelicot offered an apology. 44-year-old Lionel R., a father of 3, spoke directly to Pelicot and said,
"I am sorry. I can only imagine the nightmare you've lived through, and I'm part of this nightmare. I know my apologies won't change what happened, but I wanted to tell you that."
Still, Lionel R. tried to pin some of the blame on Pelicot's husband. 51 men stand accused in the mass rape case that has shocked the world. Over the course of 10 years, Pelicot's husband Dominique drugged his wife and then invited strangers recruited online to rape her. On Wednesday, lawyers for some of the men interrogated Pelicot about her personal and sex life, even questioning whether she was truly unconscious during the encounters. In her testimony Wednesday, Pelicot denounced attempts to paint her as anything but an unwitting victim.
"Since I've arrived in this courtroom, I felt humiliated. I'm treated like an alcoholic, an accomplice."
Pelicot's lawyer said his client was prepared for this.
"It was a challenge, but it was a challenge that's as important as the stakes. By accepting that this hearing be public, she wanted it not to be held behind closed doors without anyone seeing how a rape trial could take place."
Pelicot said Wednesday that forgiveness does not exist in this case. Her lawyer said her goal is to send a message to other victims of sexual abuse that they must not be afraid to file a complaint.
Cynthia Illouz, this is the most followed court case since that of the 2015 terror attacks, and it's been quite the week. There was the husband and the ex-wife who've both testified this week. Watching that report, first question, the fact that here she is, we know her name, Gisèle Pelicot, she speaks in front of the cameras. The defendants, they've kept their right not to be identified by their last name.
Yes, you know, Gisèle Pelicot was really brave to go in front of the public. But I think it's really important because here we are really facing something. Seeing a wake-up call about this case. Gisèle Pelicot was heavily sedated. And what happened is we really realized what is violence against women, crime against women on a daily basis. We are also discovering this phenomenon of chemical submission. We're discovering that roofing a woman is not only at nighttime in a bar, it's also happening behind closed door in a relationship, in a couple. So that's very terrific. And she's very brave to give this testimony in front of the public.
Very, very brave to give it in front of the public. The case resonating indeed. There were rallies across France last weekend, which prompted this message of thanks on Monday by the victim herself.
I have been deeply touched by this outpouring of support, which leaves me with a sense of responsibility. Thanks to all of you, I have the strength to fight this battle to the end, a battle that I dedicate to all women and men around the world who are victims of sexual violence. To all these victims, I would like to say, look around you, you are not alone.
And we're pleased to be joined by attorney and activist Rachel Flore-Pardot. Thank you for being with us. Apologies for Paris traffic in this case. Let me ask you, Hema Sibi, because the clip we just heard of Gisèle Pelicot was on Monday before she took the stand. On the stand, it was gut-wrenching. And she described how hard it's been being in the public eye.
She has, and this trial is an important moment for women. It shows that the Me Too movement is an ongoing movement. It's not a thing of the past. First and foremost, we commend her courage and bravery and determination in her quest for justice in having those abusive men condemned. The fact that she refused to go in camera for the trial also opens the door for all the women. It breaks the silence around the voices of women that testify on the violence that they have been subjected to at the hands of men. So this case for us is really a milestone because 44 years ago, Gisèle Halimi, who is a French lawyer and activist, was actually bringing the case of the rape trial. That's what we call the rape trial, and it ended in France having a definition of rape in its criminal code. Today,
You mean that before that there was no definition of rape in France's criminal code?
No, not before the rape case in 1978. So that happened at the time, and today in 2024, the legacy is that this trial is not the rape trial, but it's the trial of the rape culture. It's the trial of the mechanisms of objectification, of dehumanization of women by men, the trial of toxic masculinity that is being fed by porn, by prostitution, and by this culture of commodification of women. We literally have a man, a husband, who made the body of his wife available for other men to unleash their sexual violence on. This is pure atrocity, but it really shows the structure of patriarchy in our society and how women are subjected to sexual violence in many ways, including chemical submission, money, coercion, or physical psychological violence.
Oubdi Khan, Daniel Pelicot, he got in contact with these men. By the way, there's 50 others on the stand, but police say there's more. They just haven't had enough proof to catch them. He got in contact with these men over the internet. Is that make this something new, that something you wouldn't have seen before? Is this case an outlier case, or is this part of just something that's always existed?
I wish it was an outlier, but I think with the advent of the internet, there's a way that people lower their responsibility, and then they get into a kind of collective mindset. So the men who get contacted by the husband or who contact them, they think that their responsibility is not, they don't have any, because now they can look to him to give the consent. And I think that part of the pleasure for the men is not just the salt, but the male bonding that happens through these discussion groups, through this kind of subcultural conspiracy to humiliate Mr. Pellico's wife.
It's important to remind viewers, Umni, that rape is not an act of sex, it's an act of violence. Are these men wanting to engage in violence?
I mean, I think that it's a form of, yes, I think it's a form of violence. And I think what's so tricky about it, and you hear this about the men's testimony, is they want to pretend it's some kind of experimental sex game, when all of the premeditation and how they met the husband, Mr. Pellico, shows that it was actually about humiliating her, which is a form of violence. And then the actual acts themselves are violence. But they want to believe, and I think in part of the problem is the definition of rape in France, which I've been studying, which is really focuses on kind of explicit violence. But when you do chemical submission and then assault, that is also a form of violence, and that needs to be recognized as violence. You don't need a person who's awake saying no. The chemical submission is the form of violence, and then the attack.
Yeah, when the week began, at least one of the defense attorneys was casting doubt over whether there could have been a measure of consent. Let's take a listen.
This is not American law, in the sense that in France, you don't need to have obtained the victim's consent in order for there not to be rape. For there to be rape, the perpetrator's criminal intent must be proven. If the perpetrator is mistaken or misunderstood, the Court of Cassation always says that there is no rape.
Even when the victim is in a coma.
So we will examine the question of coma to determine on a case-by-case basis whether or not there has been a coma. We refute it.
Rachel Flore-Pardo, that line of defense, what do you make of it?
Well, defense is free, so that lawyer is free to choose the defense line he prefers. Anyway, I also understand very well why this defense line has shocked in France and abroad.
It shocked people in France.
It shocked people in France, obviously, because that lawyer also said something. He said there is rape and rape, suggesting that there will be two different types of rape. But this is first shocking and second legally false, because there is only one thing in France. Ever there is rape, ever a court of justice says that the rape is characterized, or ever the court of justice says that there was no rape. And like looking at what our criminal code says, it basically says that also rape can happen if it's by surprise or if it is by constraint. And here we are in both cases. As Gisèle Pellico was basically in the coma, right? She was not aware of what was happening. So it was both by surprise and by constraint that these acts of rapes were imposed to her. And this is something that needs to be said.
There are 50 people in the dock. 15 of them have admitted to wrongdoing and 35 not yet.
Yes, like people still, as I say, defense is free. Then the court will have to judge whether they are convinced by their arguments or not. But what makes this trial so fascinating and why it is so also interesting for media abroad to cover it? It's because it's very rare in one case to have such a big panel of men accused of rape. And this is what we learn here. This trial is extraordinary because of the number of people accused of rape and because also of the big media coverage it has. But it is also very normal when we look at the profile of these rapists, of the people accused of rape. They are basically this friend, this neighbor, this cousin, this husband, anyone that you could know in your daily life. And we can see that basically the rapist of a person accused of rape is not a monster. And this is also a trial that is really important to deconstruct the stereotypes we have of what is rape and who are the men accused of rape. Because for many years, we've seen rape as something that would only happen outside. And we could barely imagine rape to be possible in your own house, in your own bed. And this trial reminds us that it does happen in your own homes. And it's also something that we need to keep deconstructing in order to help basically victims of sexual violence speaking up and the justice system to give justice to these people.
One word on this point, and then we'll talk more about the profiles as mentioned there by Rachel Flore. Cynthia Illouz, I notice a lot of the defendants are talking about impulses, about addictions. Your thoughts on this? It was wrong what I did, but I'm a sex addict.
Yes, what it shows is the really importance of pornography in sexual cases. Dominique Pellico said that nobody's born rapist, that you become a rapist. So he's really showing the impact on pornography. You know, he met those different men. You mentioned 50 on the trial, but the police find 83. So 32, because one is dead, are still free today. So the importance of the pornography is here. They met on the website, and the file was called Against a Will. So there's not really any doubt about the consent of
this was
those
on a
men.
Sort of, just to explain, this was a hookup site for people who were into kind of deviant sex.
Yeah, this is a chat. The website was closed because it was involved in many cases, including pedopornography cases. And the file of the chat of Dominique Pellico was called Against a Will. So not really any doubt about the knowledge of those men about what they're going to do, practice a rape on her. And, you know, this is really shocking. And we were on the protest weekend with many women, a few men also, because what here is exceptional, it was mentioned, is women gathering also to say the importance of this case, because this is historic trial by the number, by the sheer magnitude of evidence seized in the computer of Dominique Pellico. And you know, usually on criminal trial, this is the problem of the proof. And usually it's one word against another. It's she said, he said. And here we have a lot of men involved, but we have also a lot of proof. And it's going to be very interesting to go into those files.
Yeah, again, it's running till mid-December. And as Rachel Flore Pardo was just mentioning, there are various profiles among the 50 others that stand alongside her ex-husband in the defendant's box. It's not a village of rapists, one resident tells regional newspaper La Provence. It's throwing the world spotlight on Mazan, a village of 6,000 in the foothills of the picturesque Mont Ventoux. And the profiles of the 51 accused are indeed varied. Eliza Herbert has more.
Some of these men are gardeners, nurses, firefighters or engineers. Others retired or volunteers, even fathers, aged between 26 and 73. And they are all accused of raping Gisèle Pellico at the invitation of her then-husband, Dominique Pellico, in their home in southeastern France between 2011 and 2020.
These are people who are not delinquents at all, who for the most part have clean criminal records and had normal family lives and professional activities. And they found themselves involved in this case, which is obviously a very important one.
35 of the 50 co-defendants maintain they are not guilty. Some claim they too are victims manipulated by the main defendant, Dominique Pellico, even saying they thought his wife was on board, despite never seeking consent from her directly. but a key testimony on Tuesday could prove lethal to their case. Finally addressing the court, Dominique Pellico himself said explicitly that they all knew they were taking part in the abuse and that they cannot claim the contrary. The only one not accused of directly abusing Gisèle Pellico is a man called Jean-Pierre M. Instead, he is admitted to copying the crime and replicating it against his own wife to rape her, sometimes with Dominique Pellico involved after the pair met online.
My client is very malleable and very naive. That's what the reports show. Well, quite simply, he walked into this. He doesn't have the personality to say no.
While the stories of these men may vary, they all share one thing in common. They are now at the centre of this disturbing case that is exposing a reality of sexual violence to France and to the world.
Umni Khan, tell us, there you heard the one of the defence attorneys there saying, my client doesn't have the ability to say no. Again, it's this question of are they predators or are they addicts? Your thoughts listening, and the other defence attorney in that report saying, my clients are not delinquents at all.
Yeah, it's... You know, it's like they're trying to defend themselves, and so they want to frame what they're doing with the language of mental illness. By using the word addiction, they're trying to take away their own responsibility. And I think it's so interesting. I just note that he says, like, I couldn't say no. So now he's positioning himself as someone with sort of inferior will, when the crime is about exerting your will over a woman and treating her like she's an object. And so the actual crime shows an actual impulse to want to dominate and humiliate and hurt. And now they're trying to paint themselves as a victim, and I find it hard to believe. I find it's very convenient to try and blame others when all the evidence indicates that they knew exactly what they were doing.
And we did have this moment on the stand this Thursday where the man admits that he realized that he'd done something wrong and that he realized that what was going on was off.
Yes. And then the question is, how is it that you didn't do something and actually act at that point? What I find terrifying about this case, really, is the total lack of empathy for the victim. There's only a connection between the men and in kind of conspiring to do this attack. But when you're right in front of this person, they're there, flesh and blood, you don't feel any empathy for her. And that is what I find terrifying. And the fact that they did it through this unconsciousness makes me think, okay, they thought they were going to get away with it. And how many people would do something like this if they thought they could get away with it?
Yeah, the equivocation coming not just from defendants in the box. There's outrage after remarks made by the mayor of Mazan speaking to the BBC.
It could have been far more serious. There were no kids involved. No women were killed. The family will have a hard time, but they can rebuild. After all, nobody died.
After all, nobody died, Hemasibi.
I think this says it all because it really shows how deeply entrenched our rape culture is and the culture of silencing women. And, you know, she's just a mere object, so her life is not valid. Nobody died, but she was raped by 50 men at a very minimum. I think this case had the merit of showing that rapists are Mr. Everybody. It's not just this monster, as we often have this myth of the rapist that is a monster that is alienated from society, but actually the rapist is around us. It's our brother, it's our father, it's even our grandfather, our coworker. They come from all walks of life. They have very different profiles, but yet they have two things in common. They are men, and they have this complacency. They have this sort of abject male solidarity in the justification of their violence against women. So, you know, the comments that we hear, even from the mayor, really dismissing the horrific experiences of Gisèle Pellico is very archaic. And the defense, sorry.
No, I was going to ask you, because you talk about a culture of rape. And just to explain for our viewers, what does that mean, that the whole of society has a culture of rape, some people have a culture of rape, and what is that culture of rape?
The rape culture is that the society allows for violence to be committed against women. The society structures this violence and organizes also this violence by levers of impunity for men that perpetrates this kind of violence. The rape culture is also a culture that fosters the objectification, the sexualization of women, their dehumanization. It's everywhere. It's layered in our society. It's the perception of women, for example, in cinema, in arts, in music, where women are often portrayed as being very like passive beings, as beings fragmented into body parts, but not as real human beings. They would be seen as, you know, like a pair of breasts, a vagina, or just like a body, but not with her face on. So that's kind of like the weight of the rape culture that I'm speaking about. And the rape culture is very much present in this case, because when we hear the defendant's arguments that are being used, it really shows, you know, how much sexual violence is entrenched in our society. It reflects the contempt against women. It reflects the height of misogyny when one of the defendants says, for example, that the husband consented, so he didn't feel like he did something wrong when he raped Gisèle Pellicot, as if the wife was the ultimate property of her husband, as if the husband had every rights over his wife. And another defendant was saying, well, I thought she pretended to be sleeping, as if, you know, having a woman that is unconscious in front of you would mean that she's consenting. These arguments really show the height of the rape culture, and our society is also responsible.
Is it getting better or worse?
Oh, it's getting better, but there are still some progress to be made. First of all, because right now what we see is that these men that are in trial also live in a society that is, you know, that groomed them by porn, by a culture of objectification of women, of dehumanization of women. When we see in France that the first view of porn is 9 years old, It's a very early age. The biggest porn platform, which is Pornhub, or the most famous one, has content and categories that include rape and sleeping. And of course, this echoes the case because it allows men to get sexually aroused, seeing a woman that is actually inert, seeing the inert body of a woman. So another example of this very rape culture is the website coco.fr, which has been shut down, you know. As it was mentioned, it was a place where pedocriminals, sex buyers, pimps were just like exchanging intimate content, dehumanizing content, sexist and racist content on women in total impunity.
Rachel Florpardo, it was interesting earlier because when I asked you about the line of defense, you kind of batted that away, saying, well, what they argue in the courtroom doesn't matter all that much. What matters more is the big, wider societal debate. Am I paraphrasing correctly?
No, I'm not sure that's what I meant, but I just wanted to build up on what was just said, because you were speaking earlier about internet and the role internet may play in rape happening or not. Obviously, rape does not need internet to happen, right? But internet does make it easier, and internet does play a big part in spreading the rape culture through pornography, including having these videos online that promote, that include pornographic films with sleeping women. And this is something that must be enlightened. And then I want to say something else. If the 51 persons that are in this courtroom had one thing in common, it will be that they're all men. And so we often say people saying online, not all men, but a lot of men. And what I want to say is that obviously not all men are rapists, but almost all rapists are men. So this mass rape trial that is now occurring in France must lead us to collectively reflect on what is patriarchy? Why do so many men still believe that they are allowed to impose the act of sex to women? Why do men believe that because a husband said that the wife had consented, that it will mean that the wife is indeed consenting?
Is it simply because, generally speaking, men are physically stronger than women?
It's not only that. It's also a matter of general equality, you know, because it's not only a matter of strength. It's also a matter of influence, of power, of money, of all what make men in so many different occasion in a position of power and of authority towards women. It's why, this is also why, at the heart of the fight against sexual violence lies the fight for equality between men and women, because the more men and women will be really equal, and I do not mean just in the legal text and or have the same rights, I mean equal in the daily life, the less there will be opportunities for them to use power and influence to impose acts of rape and sexual violence to women. And I also want to say that the feminist battle has no borders, and it's quite moving and amazing to see women across the globe raising up to show support to Gisèle Pellico. And I do think that this trial is showing to the French public, but also to the world, what is the reality of sexual violence. And it is why I'm also thankful for the media coverage. Your channel and other medias across the world are giving this trial, because I really think that if Gisèle Pellico is standing strong, if Gisèle Pellico decided not to have this trial in private and decided to sacrifice a little bit of her privacy to show the world what sexual violence is, it is in order that shame changes sides, and by making a lot of noise, we are finally answering these years and years of silence and shame, and we are giving a hand to maybe other victims to speak up.
Umni Khan, sitting on the Pacific coast of Canada, when you speak with your students, when you talk with colleagues, how does this case resonate? Is it something French, or is it something that could be Canadian?
No, it could be anywhere. I mean, it's so shocking because we have the evidence of this, but the research indicates exactly what's been said on this panel, that most women who are raped by someone they know. And a partner is someone who is a person who's actually can be very dangerous for many women. So in that sense, it's not, you know, it's not France specific. The thing I think is maybe a little France specific is the definition of consent and the fact that it's not clear that a woman's affirmative consent is necessary for legal ethical sex, I think is something that it does seem different to us and maybe something that hopefully will change, because that is an issue that has happened before where men will find a woman unconscious. Even if it's not premeditated, she's drank a little bit too much, and they think that entitles them to have sex and that will be legal. So in Canada, that's very clear now that that's not affirmative consent, and so therefore it's sexual assault. And so I'm curious about the movement in France to try and update the definition of consent, because I think that would be a helpful thing to challenge rape culture.
Rachel Flore, pardon.
Yes, I'm also advocating to have the word consent written in our criminal code and in our definition of rape. No, it's not there, but I want just to make something really, really clear. The word consent is not there, but of course it's basically very clear in our criminal code that if the woman was sleeping, if the woman was in some sort of coma, basically if the woman was not aware of what was happening or was not able to resist to it, it is rape. It's super clear. If it is what is described, it is rape. So in the actual definition, it is already allowing to characterize any types of sexual action that will be imposed to somebody who is sleeping or in the coma to be characterized as the crime of rape. So I just wanted to make it clear.
That's an interesting point. So you're saying that this won't set some kind of major jurisprudence, whatever the ruling
is. I don't know. Like, we are at the very beginning of this trial, right? This trial is meant to last 4 whole months. It has started for only 2 weeks now. So we'll see what's the decision of the court. I cannot tell you what it is. But what I want to say is that I just want to reassure all women that could maybe listen to us and wonder that maybe today in France it's allowed to impose an act of sex to somebody who is sleeping or somebody who is in the coma. And I just want to say that it is not.
Cynthia Illouz, there's one main suspect, of course, which is the ex-husband, Dominique Pellico, who was taken ill and wasn't present in the courtroom for more than a week. If he doesn't If he takes ill again, if he's not there till the end of the case, what will happen?
We were a little bit scared about him to be not showing at the trial, and it should be rescheduled. And you know, this is a very problematic thing because there are more than 50 other men involved. I want to say something about what Rachel said. She said, not all men. This is what we are seeing on different hashtags. But I want to add something. It's always almost women, always women. We all experience sexism in our daily life. We all experience a range of different violence in the metro, in our work, sometimes in the couple. And this is very important to understand what is going on. That's why it's touching a lot of women. On the profile of the different men involved, we do have a case here in France implying a French deputy called Sandrine Josso. She is the spokesperson of the charity we call, say, Don't Sleep Me, M'endors Pas, the charity founded by the daughter of Gisèle Pélicot, Caroline Darion. And she was also heavily sedated by a French senator, Joël Guerriau. So she decided to work on the topic of drugs and sexual submissions. So she's now investigating about this whole range of sexual violence.
Let's talk about that, because at the heart of the case is drug-induced rape, the powerful sedatives like Temesta, which is also known as lorazepam in this country. It boggles the mind. Women who, for instance, are fed up with having to, for instance, nurse their drink when they go to a club so that nobody spikes it. They've been speaking out, as you can see from this graph that was first published in Le Monde. Soaring are the numbers of cases of assaults being reported using chemical substances. As you saw in that graph, it's gone way up. Does that mean there are, again, more of these cases happening, or more women are brave enough to come forward and file a complaint?
Probably both, but probably women are becoming aware about the problem because, you know, this is the hashtag #MeTooBar, meaning that women were on drugs during a night, and even they don't really understand what's happening. They don't realize that a drug can be... here we have the case with Gisèle Pélicot. During at least 10 years, she didn't realize that she was heavily sedated.
Don't believe her. They say, how could she not know?
She has so many problems. She went to different doctors. Even her own daughter thought that she was having brain problems. So clearly she has no idea, even different doctors. So no problem on her and just a medical problem. They don't even say something about drugs. So here we have really raising, I think, awareness about this problem, because I think before those trials, we never really hear about this concept about a chemical submission. We just hear roofie someone, usually a woman, but at nighttime. But here we are aware about this new term about chemical submission right now.
Hema Sibi, again, I point to that graph because what does that tell you, the fact that there are more cases being flagged?
I think in the post-Me Too era, obviously, the voices of women are being more listened to. They are being more visibilized. Women felt encouraged to speak up more and maybe to complain more to the police about facts related to sexual violence. But, you know, the fight against sexist and sexual violence in France has been marked by milestones. For example, the rape trial brought by Gisèle Halimi, the Dominique Strauss-Kahn trial, the Me Too era, and now the Mazon rape trials. But it doesn't mean that everything has changed in the right way. What we can see is that, of course, France has strengthened its legislative machinery, its legislative framework to protect violence against women. So we have several very beneficial laws. We have laws on sexual harassment in the workplace, the presumption of non-consent for 15-year-old minor, but the criminalization of the purchase of sexual acts. We have several legislations that protect women, but what we see is that not enough resources are allocated to implement these laws and not enough political will to implement the fight against violence against women broadly and on the whole territory. For example, 94% of cases of complaints for rape end up dismissed in courts. That's a huge number. That means
that the president of France would argue that he made this a major cause of his first mandate, and the fact that now police are being trained to no longer dismiss it when women come in to file a complaint. Things have not improved at all?
Things probably have improved, but what we saw is that the big campaign on women's rights that was promised by the president was also a communication campaign, because not a lot of means have been allocated to this campaign. For example, as the Mouvement d'Unis supports persons on prostitution in the whole territory, we see that in practice, the law is not being implemented in a homogeneous way. Sex buyers are not arrested enough. Exit programs for persons in prostitution that are included in the laws are not implemented enough too. So we are now struggling with the implementation and the political will to go further with these policies that protect women against violence.
I just maybe want to say, maybe conclude on a note of hope. I think it is fair to say that since the Me Too movement, some things have changed. It's fair to say that the justice system is taking a better care of the sexual violence cases than it used to. It's fair to say that before the Me Too movement, before 2017, no police officer were taught about the specificities of sexual violence. Now they are. They should be more taught of the different specificities. They should be, of course, with more means, but it is improving. And also I want to say how important it is to see all this big movement of support that is going towards Gisèle Pelicot today. How important it was to see these women applauding Gisèle Pelicot outside the courtroom 2 days ago. How important it is also to see these protests going on in the streets in France to show support to Gisèle Pelicot, but also to all the victims of sexual abuse. And I just want to say that because for years, shame has not helped people speaking up, and showing that now something is changing, also saying that the justice system is doing a better job now than it used to, and that it can, it must still do better, it is also giving a hand to those people that suffer in silence so that they can speak up and ask for help.
Yeah, in the courtroom every day are members of the public, both male and female, who are rooting for Gisèle Pelicot.
We have the impression that women's voices are not heard enough. I'm facing this issue next year because my daughter is a victim of rape. So we are going to court next year, and I wanted to support something that is also dear to me.
Cynthia Idouz, will there be a before and after this case?
Yeah, definitely. It's a huge trial. What we probably are going to learn about it is we really need to change education on lawyers too, also, because you remember the president of the Vaucluse courtroom opened his statement saying we're not going to call the act rape, but sexual acts. So it's really minimizing the facts. And when we're talking about rape culture, this is really, what does it mean? Lawyers, a judge talk about this, and we really need to reinforce our education system. You mentioned the president, Emmanuel Macron. I think a few steps have been done, but we need really to improve. And all women are gathering together to push this movement and to fight against violence against women.
Cynthia Idouz, I want to thank you so much. I want to thank as well Hema Sibi, Rachel Flore Pardo, Oumni Khan for being with us from Canada. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.